Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that will provide a running commentary on Brexit this year and next year and every year. My name is Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
So this podcast began a month before the Brexit referendum and Brexit has given us no end of material. We've spoken about Article 50 in 2016, we talked about the divorce bill in 2017. But what will the Brexit buzzwords be in 2018? Find out what the talking points will be after this. Three things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the transition period, we're going to talk about trade talks, and then finally we're going to talk about the Brexit legislation that needs to be passed this year. First thing that we need to talk about, Steve, is a transition period, or as our doomed Prime Minister Theresa May keeps on calling it, the implementation period.
Yeah, so let's get a couple of things straight first with this. It's not an implementation period. There's going to be nothing necessarily to implement at the moment. Based on where the government is in terms of preparing for Brexit, we don't have plans in place for seemingly for the increased numbers of customs officers that we're going to need, as we've discussed from previous episodes. This isn't an implementation period. It is, in effect, an extension of the Article 50 process. It's the government realising that we're not going to be able to get everything done by the end of the Article 50 period, but we can't extend the Article 50 period officially because that would look really bad for the hardline Brexiteers.
Well, quite. So technically, the government could extend the Article 50 period. That would, though, need the agreement of all of the other 27 countries in the EU, which they might well get and probably would get if the alternative was no deal. However, if the government extended it, it would remain an EU member, which would not be palatable with the backbenchers. Now, the deadline for agreeing a transition period would be the European Council in March. That's the next big meeting. That's probably when it would have to be decided by. Partly it's because, as you say, nothing could be agreed and it's to avoid no deal, but also to try and give business a bit of certainty and a bit of an idea of what would happen, so that, because if there was going to be no deal, then flight companies, for instance, as we've talked about, would have to start changing their schedules round about now.
Yeah.
Another problem that might come up with a transition period is whether the European Court of Justice would have oversight over Britain, and the European Union wants EU citizens living in Britain to have full rights. For that, there would need to be some sort of ECJ oversight. Jacob Rees-Mogg, using the kind of language about colonialism that only a rich white man can, says that if the ECJ has access over Brexit, then Britain might be a colony of the EU.
Yeah, and this is probably actually the biggest threat, I suppose you could call it, from the hardline Brexiteers to the government. The distaste and dislike they have for the European Court of Justice, seemingly because I think they think it's the same thing as the European Court of Human Rights, they're not, is absolutely astounding. You know, there's always going to need to be some form of body to adjudicate when issues arise and clashes arise between the EU and Britain, or on matters of trade, on matters of citizenship of EU nationals, all of those sorts of things. You're going to need to have a body there. It's how these things operate. And the ECJ being that, for the interim at the very least, makes total sense, because otherwise we've got to create a new international body in some form to oversee it.
And it would need to be done in 6 months.
Yeah.
In a transition period, the other thing that needs to be worked out is the trade deals that the EU has with about 60 other countries. Would they apply to Britain in a transition period if they weren't part of the customs union? But it's fine, because I'm sure that Liam Fox is on top of that at trade.
Totally, yeah.
Must be. All right, so there's nothing to worry about there. Next thing is trade talks. The EU has basically said that Britain needs to choose between what it calls the Norway option. Wake up, listeners, this is important. The Norway option. Norway's part of the EEA, so they have access, they're in the single market, but have to accept a lot of the rules that are put forward. Now, the Remain camp, and a lot of Remainers now, so people like Owen Jones make the argument a lot, that if we're in the EEA, it basically means accepting EU laws, but we don't have any say in making them. Now, for lots of long and boring complicated reasons we're not going to go into, that's not quite 100% true. Norway's got a bit of wiggle room, but that's one model. The other model is the Canada model that the EU wants us to choose. Basically, it's a free trade arrangement. Now, the Canada deal isn't really acceptable to the UK because the Canada deal doesn't really cover services, and the service sector is 80% of Britain's economy. Yeah. So what Theresa May has said is, we don't want the Norway option, that doesn't give us enough control back, so therefore we want a bespoke trade agreement. There are examples of countries where that happens. One example is Ukraine, which is a bit of a middle ground area. Ukraine has access to the single market in some areas, but not in others. Also, there's a Swiss option, which is basically Switzerland wanted to join the EU, but a referendum didn't let them. So they basically, sector by sector, set up lots of different agreements to be part of the single market. But the EU doesn't like the Swiss arrangement. I don't think they'd give the same sort of arrangement to Britain.
No, not across every kind of sector. But I could see there being a situation where a couple of specific sectors, you might see. So, for instance, finance.
Places we might diverge, probably say like agriculture. So we talked about mover and shaker Michael Gove in our midweek shop. He's trying to improve animal regulation so that we are kinder on puppies and beavers, because having destroyed the future of the nation's children, Michael Gove is trying to rehabilitate himself by saving the nation's animals.
Yeah, as well as bringing out recommendations for how we should change subsidies to farmers. So, you know, that's something which is probably going to be a drastic move away from the common agricultural policy.
So there are models. However, there is a trade-off involved where if Britain wants single market access, and the more single market access that Britain wants, and if you talk to just about any British business, they want access to the single market, then there needs to be a trade-off then about the fact that we need to sign up to rules of the EU, and we also then need to sign up to European court jurisdiction, which, as we've talked about already, isn't very popular. Which is a bit of a problem. The other problem, I'm getting a lot of this from the Institute for Government in a doobly-doo below the episode. We'll link to the reports because they're very, very interesting. What they say is that Theresa May's made it very clear what she doesn't want. So she's rejected the Canada deal. She rejected the Norway deal. I think she did that in both the Lancaster House speech and the Florence speech. But hasn't really said about what she does want.
Yeah, and that's the biggest flaw in the government's position currently, is that, I mean, as of like last month, I think it was, they hadn't even had a discussion between the cabinet about what that end point they were aiming for with these negotiations was. And it's impossible, literally impossible, to negotiate something well if you don't know what you're trying to get. But the political difficulties of either going for a hard Brexit or a softer Brexit for the Conservatives is so vast that they've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And if they'd had this conversation and worked it out and just taken the hit, I don't know, a year ago, then we'd be a hell of a lot further along in the negotiations.
So it's the stupidity of triggering Article 50 to get quick popularity rather than to actually solve anything.
Yeah.
I mean, over Christmas, I didn't talk about Brexit with my in-laws because I didn't want to get involved in a massive protracted political row. However, we're not in the bloody cabinet. Anyway. So there's that. Also, time is very tight for the government to actually say what it wants. Before we go on to the third and final area of Brexit that 2018 will bring us, trade talks with it also mean that the Irish border situation, which we covered in a podcast with Fred Grinrod, and we covered in a little bit when we talked with LJ and Bridget, the Brexit in December, that issue is going to come to the fore as well, because if it won't be part of the customs union, then there will be need to be customs checks, and therefore there will be a hard Irish border, at which point basically everyone runs around screaming and setting themselves on fire.
Yeah, I mean, there is so many things that can still go wrong with the Irish border question. Now, the government quite sensibly have basically outlined the notion that, yes, we've signed a piece of paper which everybody's happy with, quote unquote, but it hasn't actually solved anything. The problem still remains. There is a high likelihood that we are going to hit another stumbling block over the Irish border question. Nothing has been agreed until everything's agreed, as the government has said, which is very true. Actually, in some ways, you can legitimately argue that the EU was not necessarily being helpful in the stances they were taking over the Irish border question, because if we don't know if Britain's going to be in the customs union or the single market, or what aspects of it might be or might not be, if it's going to be bespoke or not, or whatever. All of those things will have a massive impact on what can happen over that Irish border. And so trying to shoehorn it in at an early stage is quite difficult. You're never actually going to be able to resolve it until you know what the relationship between the Britain as a whole is and the rest of the EU. You've got the limited time already to resolve the trade talks. And then on top of that, once you've got that outline, then you've got to resolve the Irish border question. Because you can't necessarily do them at the same time. You can to a degree, but until you know every last detail, you can't 100% solve it. And because of the nature of the Good Friday Agreement, the fact that it's backed up by international law and is an internationally recognised treaty, it's really difficult to just kind of hand wave this away. It needs to be dealt with meticulously, and it needs to be dealt with properly.
Yeah, and Brexiters like Dan Hannan, when asked about the Irish border question, basically do say it'll be fine by the final deal, which is either, you could say, a kind of common sense approach, the kind of thing that you're outlining, that we don't know, or one could argue it's a little bit Panglossian and it would be quite nice to have a solution, seeing as no one's been able to think of one yet.
Yeah.
Final thing, it's legislation. If you, like Steve, like watching BBC Parliament listeners, you're going to spend a lot of time watching MPs talk about Brexit. There are 8 Brexit bills, apparently, according to an Institute for Government article, that are going to be debated and passed this year. Now, bear in mind that after the referendum to the general election, in that just under a year, Parliament spent 150 hours debating Brexit. And it could well be more this year. We'll try and very, very quickly just run through them. As Steve's got his head in his hands. It's like being back teaching already. First one is the EU withdrawal bill, or as they would have liked to have called it, the Great Repeal Bill. And the whole point of that is to try and transfer EU law into British law.
And let's start counting off all of the different problems with these bills as we go along. So the Great Repeal Bill, as they want it to be known, has a number of clauses within it which would deliver power to the government to just make changes to rules and regulations without the consent of Parliament and without getting Parliament involved at all. It is something that they need to look at, something that they need to move ahead. And there's just so many amendments to this bill that there's going to be an awful lot of things to talk about and an awful lot of ways for it to go wrong for the government. And they don't have the votes necessarily to get everything through, as has been demonstrated already. So they need to be sensible. They need to start working with their rebels on their own side. And in some areas, reports are that they actually have started it now. And they've now seen what will happen if they don't pay attention to their more liberal colleagues on the government benches.
It's almost like they shouldn't have replaced their chief whip, really.
Yeah.
We'll go back to the EU withdrawal bill in a minute, but as well as having to make sure that the bill is sensible enough to pass with the more Remain Conservative backbenchers, also there's a taxation bill and a trade bill expected this month. I'm looking forward to whatever Liam Fox comes up with. Now, the trade bill, that will need consent from the Welsh Assembly and the Scottish Assembly. So it will be interesting to see if there's a stumbling block there. Just go back to the EU withdrawal bill. That's in the House of Lords at the moment. It currently has 405 amendments to it and 85 clauses. If the bill's defeated at the committee stage, then the House of Lords might add amendments as well. This bill kind of needs to be passed fairly quickly because I think the government wants it to be passed by the summer and receive royal assent, at which point the 800 to 1,000 statutory instruments can then be implemented by the government. And that presumably, may well need to happen by March 2019 if Britain does end up leaving the EU, depending on the transition period. Mm-hmm. So there is a bit of a race against time.
Yeah, there's just so much work to be done. And again, we keep coming back to this, but the government has repeatedly managed to shoot herself in the foot by rushing to trigger Article 50. Having a bit of a debate and a discussion about the number of SIs, statutory instruments, that would be needed, having an actual clue about the number of them at all to begin with would have been a very good starting point. I think it was David Alan Green on his Jack of Kent blog made some good points of this when Article 50 was first triggered, is that there's no one literally knew how many of these rules and regulations came from the EU, because we hadn't been, you know, keeping them in a nice, organised, centralised file on Excel spreadsheet that said rules that come from the EU.
I like to think that Bill Cash has a filing cabinet at home with them all in.
I wouldn't put it past him, actually. Mm. But yeah, so they've had to go back to the basics and start trying to work out what came through when. What things do we need to look to bring into law, and what things do we not need to? Not because they're not important or because we don't want to keep them, but because we've actually gone further than they do anyway. So, for instance, on animal rights, actually, British law is a lot more stringent. Spain, for instance, still has bullfighting. That's something that wouldn't be allowed as a result of that. We don't need to import the animal rights legislation over.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of other things where we do. Up until recently, we didn't know what they were.
Oh, God. Also, there are a few bills that have been promised for months and haven't turned up. So, we mentioned the tax bill and the trade bill. We talked in our midweek shot about Michael Gove and the stuff he's been talking about, saving beavers and stuff, and the changes or proposed changes to the Common Agricultural Policy. Although he's made announcements on funding to farmers, and that I think is going to continue until 2022, there are agricultural and fishery white papers which were promised autumn last year that may well come up in January but haven't come yet. A migration bill, which is meant to determine Britain's immigration policy after Brexit, that was originally meant to be introduced in the summer and now maybe will happen at some point this year. But that's fine because immigration isn't a politically sensitive topic. So
no,
there's no need to worry on that one.
No, I mean, the immigration bill is going to be an absolutely fascinating watch because it will get an awful lot of media coverage and an awful lot of attention from both the left and the right. It's going to be worth keeping an eye out on the polling, on the public perception of this bill, because my gut instinct is actually what we're probably going to see is something like a points-based system, which will allow basically qualified individuals from wherever to come in, but you know, it won't just be importing low-skilled labour. In theory, that should go down quite well with the electorate. That matches roughly what they want. But the manner in which that is sold through the right-wing press and the left-wing press is going to be absolutely fascinating. This is one of those bills where actually if Labour play it right, they may be able to be quite clever and get a few victories against the government and force a few little minor tweaks to the policy, which will be some nice feathers in the opposition's cap. But obviously it depends on what's in that bill. And at the moment, we don't know, but it's something that Labour should be preparing for.
If it is a points-based system and it is on people with qualifications, that would ignore sectors that are in need of labour from outside, like agricultural workers, fruit pickers, that kind of thing.
Which is why what I might also expect to see is we'll have this migration policy as a top line, this is how it's going to be, but then you'll have in the agriculture policy an exemption from that. For seasonal workers to come in and do that sort of stuff. So you'll find that there will be a migration policy which is very Brexit friendly, but actually amongst all the different other white papers that we're going to see being brought forward, you'll actually get a much better view of how it's going to work in totality, because there will be little tidbits hidden in there as to what the practical implementation of that migration policy will be.
And that is actual implementation, not transition.
Yeah.
Just so you're aware, Theresa May.
But we don't know when that will be implemented, because they want to implement it during that implementation transition period, but they probably can't. So
finally, a bill that I think has been introduced at the advice of the Institute for Government, or rather the Institute for Government said that they should introduce a bill entrenching EU citizens' rights, and the government appears to have agreed. So the government has said that at some point there will be a bill about EU citizens' rights this year, but it hasn't been introduced yet, and no one knows anything. And the fact that those rights are still up in the air is absolute madness, and would therefore assume that the government still doesn't quite understand that you shouldn't piss people off before a negotiation.
Like, it just makes so little sense that we've been effectively trying to hold these people hostage as a negotiating chip here. One of the things that we have seriously lacking in is good faith from the EU side, just because of how we've been, or how the government has been handling themselves over there in Europe versus how they've been handling the press back home. We've said before that it's like the government's forgotten that just because they can't speak French or German doesn't mean that the French and Germans can't read the English press. And they do, and they do report on it, and they're seeing exactly the kind of nonsense that's being said back home and how it compares and contrasts to what's being said over on the other side of the channel. And, you know, we need to give them some good faith signs, and this would be such an easy one to do because it will be popular. No one's against, actually, the European citizens who are here already staying here. So I just don't understand the logic behind not guaranteeing it already.
No, that seems like a good enough note to end on. We're going to keep you updated about the progress of these bills, about the progress of various trade talks and what have you. We'll have the old podcast on it, but don't expect a podcast every week on the passage of the migration bill or the agriculture bill, unless there's a serious popular will for it, but I imagine that will might not be there. So instead, follow us on Twitter at NoChampagnePod. Look at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne, and look at our website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Also, my Twitter handle is paperbackrioter,
and mine is at centradical.
James Cram designed our logo, and Dave Depper produced our theme tune for Good Times. Happy plotting, everyone.